you can wave your hands all around and see what happens.
My name is Marnin. You've just been listening to my theremin, but now you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and we've got an episode of Nutty Bites for you today, and we want to talk about tropes that need to die. That's right. I was going through my memories today. You know how you get those memories on your socials, and there was a conversation between Mr. Jason Banks and I about tropes that, you know, tired tropes, and I was like, you know what? We never actually recorded about that. So let's do that. We're going to be talking about tropes that need to die. But with me today, as always.
Hi, I'm the trope of the sexy co-host. And my name is Tech.
And our regular co-host.
So that if you're the trope of the sexy co-host, then I'm the answer to that, the ugly guy. Oh, my name's Jason.
Aren't you the funny black friend?
Yeah, you're here to say things like, damn, and that is whack.
By the way, that's one of my favorite gags in that movie. It's like, oh, damn.
We have to give an honorable mention to all of those, like, scary movies and teen movie, not another teen movie, and the others that really hang lanterns on the tropes because, yeah, that's just great. I love, you know, the Wayans pointing out that black people die first and then dying. I mean, that was just great.
Why doesn't anyone ever want to take a dump on my chest? Oh, that is whack.
All right, moving on. That's about as close as you're going to get to the PG-13, mister. So, Tech, you have some rules for us.
Right. Okay. So, as much as I want to just be the angry old man yelling at clouds, and as much as I could go on just an absolute tear of things I don't like in movies, that's not constructive. So I would like to, as we come up with these tropes that need to die, can we come up with at least one example of a movie, a TV show, a game, a song, something that has done it better that we can use as examples of ways that we can defeat these tired, hackneyed tropes and come up with better media for everybody? Now, the thing I found interesting is as I was going through my list, because I've got I got a couple examples here. Of tropes that we're going to go through. My examples of media that better, most of it's pretty old. And some of them go back to the 70s. So the thing I've discovered is that the solutions for this is better writing. And better writing doesn't know any dates or times. It's not like we can only find solutions to these problems now. There were solutions there the whole way along. We just have to do better.
Agreed.
Oh, most definitely. Like, I mean, I had to give myself a boss battle this morning and watch the 4-hour Snyder cut. And right off the bat, a trope that jumped out to me that needs to die is female superheroes don't need bikini bottoms and tiny skirts to be superheroes. Like, I mean, all of, like, listen, I get it. In Black Panther, there was some traditional looking garb that had, you know, legs and things in them. But they were splits and functional. Like, they weren't, like, nobody was navel gazing from a Dutch angle up Wonder Woman's skirt. Like you don't need that. To be fair, it's nowhere near as comfortable or functional as, I don't know, pants.
With pockets, yes.
Every medieval fantasy game, for some reason, female armor is a chainmail bikini.
Or molded metal with boobs.
Yeah. Right. How does that work?
Have you ever seen, so, you know, like the Society for Creative Anachronism, when they do open field heavy warfare with wooden sticks, have you ever seen what an actual female fighter's breastplate looks like?
A sheet of steel.
Yeah. It just looks like a normal breastplate, just dished out a little bit further to make room for the fighter's chest. And that's it, because individual boob cups in plate mail would hurt like hell if
and
you got hit.
And it's not structurally sound. I mean, no. Imagine taking a lance to something that doesn't have the proper structure. We know what women wore while fighting in combat in medieval or even older times. We have fossils. We have, what was the one that they dug up a couple of years ago in Scandinavia? And they're like, yes, this was a warrior. Yes, it was clearly a woman. Yes, look at her breastplate. It is normal.
Just imagine falling down. Like, not even taking a hit in combat.
Oh,
just imagine
gosh. Tripping
and falling on steel boob cups.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's like...
As your sternum gets shattered in half.
oh God, what was that movie? I remember it now, where they have a female character. She's in like this kind of like cocktail dress and like she has to fight. So she just like splits it so she can actually move. Like
True Lies.
I think it's done.
My girl, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Listen, Jamie Lee Curtis. Oh, I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
I've also seen that in Western movies.
Yes.
Where they cut their skirts so they can ride horses.
Yeah. It's exampled in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. It is exampled in a couple of different things. I believe there's a Tia Carrera movie where she does it.
Yeah. Like it just, like, I get it. You want, like, for some reason, every superhero female has to be super sexy. I guess the CW has like infiltrated everything, but that doesn't mean form has to come over function. Like,
people don't seem to understand that you can be sexy and be covered. Captain Marvel was freaking sexy. I mean, every scene that she was in was sexy.
The Pierce daughters from Black Lightning, they're full covered.
Yeah. Mm.
There was even a scene where she's trying out superhero costumes and she's like, how the hell do I move in this?
Best part is she literally at one point is trying to do kicks and splits the side and is like,
yeah,
it's the best.
It's fantastic. You know, why are women in, like, let's just look at Xena. Okay. Like Xena, female empowerment. Awesome. Why does she not want her belly covered? Like, if I were fighting Xena or, Kalisto or any of the female warriors, I'd be aiming right for their stomachs because they've got no protection.
Gut shot. It's the worst way to go. Worst way to go. Slow and painful.
So on this note, on this exact same note with their armor is fighting style.
Mm-hmm.
This trope, this idea that women can't hit hard enough to hurt a man, so that they need to resort to spinny kicks to do enough damage so that so the woman is weaker and frail and smaller than all of the bad guys in the movie, but due to her amazing martial arts prowess and techniques and her doing of spinny kicks, she can win the fight. So I watch enough fight sports and enough, you know, women's boxing, kickboxing, MMA, etc. This is easily BS. I mean, to anyone who thinks that they can take a woman's punch because they don't hit as hard, well, go up against Ronda Rousey or Miesha Tate or any of them and take a good hit to the head and tell me how you feel after that. Because guess what? Ronda Rousey never won with a spinny kick in her life.
Or
she got knocked out by a spinny kick.
Yes, she did. What's the Muay Thai fighter that we were talking about earlier?
Oh, Rika Ishige. Tiny doll. She's 4'10". She weighs about 105 pounds. Now we all know the real reason why they make the girls do spinny kicks. It's also attached to the same reason as to why they have to fight in bikini bottoms. It's because girls have pretty legs
and patriarchy,
we want to put them on screen. I get that, but there are examples. Example: Sigourney Weaver in the Alien movies never did a spinny kick in her life. Never wore anything revealing except for in the end when she's like going into the hyperspace tube in her underwear. In all of the combat scenes, she's not showing belly. She's not showing legs. She's not showing boob. And she never does a spinny kick or a high flashy leg thing. And she still manages to defeat all the xenomorphs and stand up and be equal or better than all those colonial marines. So you don't need it. You really don't. You just choose to do it because it's easy.
Even in films where you would think spinny kicks should be, prime example, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. There's a lot of floofy, flippy stuff in it, sure. But the women go toe-to-toe with the master swordsman the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
And then they don't have to resort to spinny kicks. They don't have to resort to, I need to somehow generate power by bouncing off of things. You know, and Rika is a prime example of, by the way, you want to have your tiny, the tiny woman fighter, you can do that and still kick butt. You want to have a fighter that can absolutely take down, any opponent and not lose their femininity. Rika is a prime example. I mean, she comes into the ring in the pink Power Ranger outfit sometimes, you know, she'll cosplay. She does all these crazy things. And it's great because you don't have to like decide to remove the femininity in order for us to believe that she could fight.
You know, and, you know, another example of just stupid costume designing because women are supposed to be sex is Power Girl. Like, Power Girl literally had a cleavage window for decades at this point. And finally, they actually gave her meaning to get rid of it. And they actually used character development and, like, stuff to get rid of it. Basically, what happened was Superman was like, you know, why do you dress that way? You don't have to dress that way. Like, and she was basically like, I left this hole here because I don't think I was worthy to wear the S. Because she's actually a clone of Supergirl.
Obviously. Right.
And so he was like, what are you talking about? You can literally, you've done so much heroics. Why would you ever do that? No, seriously, put the thing on. And they got rid of it. And of course, it had to be a guy that gives her permission to do so. She couldn't find the agency to do it herself. And that's a whole nother. But it's just, if you're going to do such ridiculous things, then make it across the board, which is one of the things I remember. I think it was you, Nutty, that brought it up. It was where some guys were doing like a charity thing and they would do poses of superhero characters, like female superhero characters.
Oh, the Hawkeye Initiative.
Yeah.
So it's a Tumblr of this one dude and he's doing all of the superhero. He's replicating exact comic book covers and poses and things that he saw female characters doing, but he's dressed as Hawkeye.
And it's like,
All the boobs and butt poses.
All the boobs and butt. You know the Mary Jane picture, that faint classic one of her drinking tea
on the couch and she's like all contorted?
Yeah, in her underwear. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, most of those are impossible because you dislocate something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
anything drawn by Rob Liefeld.
Fair.
Tropes that need to die. Rob Liefeld's art.
Yes, Rob Liefeld's art. Although we can credit Rob Liefeld for bringing us the Deadpool we all know and love, because Deadpool was a character before Rob started writing about him, and everything we love about Deadpool came from Rob, but his drawing. Oh yeah.
Oh my.
Exploiting drawing. He's learned how to draw hands and feet, I've heard.
So no, while we're on the topic of fighting.
Yeah.
Another one I got to bring up.
Okay.
Fighting does not need to, and very rarely includes these tumbleweeding, like kick four times in the air. You know, why are fu in martial arts movies is a thing and is its own style and is amazing and super fun to watch. I'm not discounting that. But why does every single fight scene in every single superhero movie have to involve backflips and, you know, impossible moves? That's not what fighting looks like. And the idea that these producers have is that, oh, real fighting is boring and dull and wouldn't look good in a movie. Yeah. Born Identity.
Or better yet,
Born Identity used Penchak Silat and Krav Maga to amazingly good effect. And when shot well with good fighters, it looks incredible, and it looks so real. That fight where he buries the pen into the back of Jackal's hand, so good.
John Wick. John Wick is one of my favorite fighting movies, simply because Keanu keeps going back to the same moves, because that's what an actual fighter does.
Absolutely.
They don't go, oh, let me do something I haven't done in three scenes. No, they keep going back to the same move. Why? Because it works.
Another one I got to mention in that is Black Panther, because Black Panther is the only movie in modern history that you can do wrestling in a movie.
Yeah.
And have it show, you know, that wrestling as a fighting style shows up well and is shot well. That for years and years and years, the excuse has always been, oh, we're not going to put wrestling in a movie. Wrestling's boring and wrestling doesn't look good. No, because tell you what, my boy Chadwick and my boy Michael B. Jordan, they looked real good wrestling on that waterfall.
Remember, he wrestles in Mbaku.
I'm sorry, you were talking about wrestling. I had one person in my head. I was picturing Winston Duke. Thank you very much.
But listen, you know, people thinking that real fighting is boring, there are knockout reels for a reason. Like, no one gets knocked out by eight punches in a row. No. It's the one that gets you. and you go to sleep.
The thing is, Hollywood. It's not that people don't think. It's Hollywood doesn't think. Hollywood has decided what is true and what audiences are willing to accept. And they've actually groomed people to believe things. Mm-hmm. And there are things that people believe because of Hollywood. If they've now done studies, if you see that you're getting shot, you fall backwards. But if you don't know you're being shot, you just collapse. Why? Because Hollywood has trained us to think that if on impact with a bullet, we would go flying.
Yeah, I read that was actually a study that was done on police officers and criminals that had been shot in altercations. I read this. It was an essay by Tom Clancy that I read that they were discussing this very point where a lot of the 70% of the people that were shot fell down. Didn't fall down because of the injury. They fell down because they thought they had to.
Yeah.
And they've been reflexively trained by years of video games and TV and other media that when you're shot, you fall down. But you know what? A deer is a 200-pound animal. A human being is a 200-ish pound animal. A deer, unless it's shot directly in the central nervous system or the heart, will run 4 miles until it exsanguinates and dies. Yeah. There's nothing stopping a human from doing the same thing. It's just we're conditioned through media to think these things that have to happen. A woman cannot punch as hard as a man and ergo has to do a spinny kick to win a fight. A girl has to wear a bikini to be an adept martial artist. And when you're shot, you fall down.
And there's so many other things that come into play there, like we all have heard the famous Ridley Scott quote, nobody's going to come watch a movie about a guy named Muhammad Muhammad. Really? Because we all watched a movie about a guy named Chadwick Boseman. We all came to Serenity to watch. Jason, can you pronounce his name for me?
Chatswaj.
Thank you. Because I can't even pronounce his name, but he is amazing. Okay. We are all watching these movies and Hollywood has decided that we're not willing to accept it and they are wrong. And that's why we are talking about these topics. These tropes need to die because Hollywood keeps deciding this is what we want. This is not what we want. Well, and there are better examples.
And this goes back decades. I mean, yeah. John Wayne is not his real name. His real first name is Marion.
Martin Sheen is not his name.
Yeah. No one is ever going to believe in a tough guy named Marion. So we have to change his name to John. Why? Why can't we believe in a tough guy named Marion? You tell us that he's a tough guy and we'll believe you.
Yeah.
Even though there is a song by a country musician legend named Johnny Cash, where the song is about the toughest dude in the room, and he's a boy named Sue.
Exactly, exactly. All right, so I love that the first two tropes that you guys were talking about are feminist problems.
Oh no, I got a couple more.
No, I know you do, but I'm gonna suggest one.
Okay,
and I love that my two guys are like, smash the patriarchy. We got to talk about this. So I'm gonna defend y'all sex. Okay, the trope of when we have a love triangle. That the other guy or girl or whomever, but generally it's guy, has to be evil, secretly evil or awful. Or, and included in this is everything's perfect till the person comes home and finds their significant other cheating in a very bad way. It's usually they catch them in the middle of the act or something like that. But why does the other person have to either, oh, I'm going to send their kids to boarding school, or oh, I've been sleeping on the side, or oh, she's horrible,
to tack onto that one, because it's one of my lightning round ones. When the main character sees his love interest with her boyfriend, and he is an absolute jerk that treats her badly, is mean to everyone, is a total bully, has no redeeming qualities whatsoever, but she loves him and she's in a relationship with him. Well, I got to change her mind and I got to set up the fight for the final act because I got to punch him.
Yeah, like this is all wrong. How do we do this better?
Did you?
I have an example.
Did you just recently watch 500 Days of Summer or something?
No, I've actually never seen that.
Don't. Just don't.
Okay. I have an example of where we can do this and it works on the other side. Venom. Venom, you know, Tom Hardy meets up with his ex-girlfriend. She's got a new date. He instantly wants to hate this guy. But Dr. Dan is awesome. He's a great character.
And he Dr. Kidd like tries to help him because I remember the scene where he's like eating that lobster.
Oh yeah. And he's like, the lobster tank scene is the best scene of all from Venom. I mean, like, if you don't want to watch Venom, just watch the, just type into the Googles or the YouTubes, Venom lobster tank scene, and you will thank me later. But I mean, Dan doesn't get jealous. He just is there to help. He sees this guy eating lobsters in the middle of a lobster tank, and he's like, we need to take him to the hospital right now. Not, I need to get you away from this man.
The best part about Dr. Dan is that he kind of replaces the girlfriend in the movie because he spends more time with Tom Hardy.
He does. But what I love about it is because he's a good guy, does not stop Tom Hardy's character from wanting to be with his ex anymore. He's still like, no, I still love her. Like, this guy's a good guy, but I still love her and I still want to be back with her.
Which is like, which is probably.
And that's perfect.
Yeah, it's like the most realistic version of that, right? Like, it's in real life, if you miss your ex or whatever, you're not going to like come up with some harebrained Looney Tunes scheme to break them up. Like,
there's an alien symbiote living inside of me. I need your help. Please come back to me, baby. That's the worst line.
You know, another example of if it was done correctly is Star Wars, because who's to say they all just can't be together?
Oh, you're talking about the new Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, that's his sister, man.
Yeah. Oh, no, God, no. But no, like, seriously, Finn, Poe, and Rey.
That's not a love triangle. That's a triad.
Exactly. Like, it was a wonderful thing.
Sexy throuple right there.
That's exactly. And it's all centered around Finn.
Right. That's the thing. It's not centered around, what's her name?
Rey.
It's centered around Finn. Listen. Or it should be.
I mean, do you blame anyone in this situation?
Oh, I get it.
Like, it's very obvious the reason why Rey and Poe kind of have a little bit of animosity or frenemy stuff is because they're both, like, with Finn.
I just want to know, where does BB-8 fit in to that?
That's the custody child.
Oh.
Yeah.
Notice they were arguing over custody.
By the way, which is, again, the best scene in that last movie is at the beginning, after they get the Millennium Falcon back. And they're literally arguing, like, what happened to my ship? What happened to BB-8? Like, and you're just like, oh.
That is totally, you forgot to pack underwear. You have underwear at your house. Okay, but you need to bring clean clothes every time. You know, that is a total custody argument right there.
And another, speaking of tropes with male characters that need to die, can we just stop having emotionless male characters? Like,
Yes.
Why did it take Leonard Nimoy doing something called Three Men and a Baby to show men doing things that were considered womanly? Like, and
yeah, even then it was like it was a gimmick.
Yeah, and it was also there were scenes of them being inept at doing things like changing diapers or whatever. But like, you know, at least he tried to buck the trend, because spoiler alert, it's three of the manliest dudes of the time, raising a daughter. And, like, they have to deal with that.
We had Steve Guttenberg.
Tom Selleck.
One with the mustache.
Tom Selleck. And from Cheers.
Oh, gosh.
You know, what's his name?
Ted, that guy. No.
He was on The Good Place.
Ted Danson,
that's his name.
But, you know, then again, Leonard Nimoy was really progressive, so.
Yes. And by the way, if you've never looked up his art, check out Leonard Nimoy's photography, especially, it's not the Fat Art Project. It's like the Body Something. Anyway, he did this great series of, body revolution photos, nudes, and they are amazing. And there's one with women in a circle that I did art of.
So I'll give you one that I don't like. Selfish main characters. Selfish enough to the point that other people's emotions matter none compared to theirs. And the big example of this is, I'm sorry, funerals are not a place to pick up a date.
Nope.
So the two big examples I got to give here are from video games, and it's Mass Effect and Cyberpunk, you have got romance options for your main character. And in Mass Effect 3, you pick up a date at his husband's funeral.
Yeah.
It is
Male Shep is a dog.
An absolute dog. The guy is, he's putting a photo on the memorial. He's saying goodbye to his dearly departed husband. And if you play gay male Shep and you try this romance angle, you walk right up, put your arm around him and go, hey.
I mean,
then you give him a kiss.
Granted, the dude in question is Freddie Prinze Jr. and he's beefcakey, but
but no,
that there's decorum
in Cyberpunk. It's a little bit better, where you have the tragic loss of a teammate of your character V, and you know her girlfriend, and her girlfriend is of course very distraught by the loss of this teammate. And if you are playing a gay female V, there is a romance option with this character, but she initiates it and initiates it a couple of weeks after the funeral, after going through a grieving process. She starts to come after you, which is fine, but still.
They wrote that is the problem.
Just before you get down to business. Just before it happens, you walk into the house to find her, runny mascara, crying on the side of the tub because she's remembering her dead girlfriend. And then you're like, oh, no, it's okay. I'll take care of you. And then you get to smash.
Can I just say sadness into sex is never a good, it's never a good look.
That doesn't work that way in life.
No. No, like I get the world's about to end and I'm sad about the fact that the world is ending and then people are gonna smash. I know that's
also in Mass Effect 3.
I know that's a thing, like I get it, that's like maybe an exception, but mourning and loss translating into sex, that doesn't work for me.
If you romanced Liara the blue girl all the way through the Mass Effect trilogy and you make it to Mass Effect 3 and you make it to the end and you haven't romanced anybody else, you find yourself staring at the end of the world, like in that scene where the asteroid hits the water and you're watching that tidal wave come towards you. You're watching the end of the world and you're like, so you want to knock out a quickie? And Liara's like, okay. And then you go and you do. That's not what Liara sounds like, but
this is a reenactment by tech for comedic effect.
Yes.
You know, but like those, I don't know why that's a thing. Like, I mean, traumatizing events, whether it's a kidnapping, a bombing, an accident, a plane crash, a funeral, whatever, none of those are places to find a date.
And I'm gonna get a little personal here. I hope it's okay, Tech. But Tech and I got a lot closer after 9/11. It did not lead into us instantly smashing or having a relationship, but that was an experience that we each went through in different parts of the world. And it was kind of like, oh crap, what just happened? And our relationship got a lot stronger after that. And then that next summer, we got together.
That led to us talking. But it's not like we're in the rubble of the towers going, wow, the world's ending. We might as well knock out a quick one before the firefighters show up.
Exactly. Like this, that's how things work. Things progress because the feelings might get stronger because you've shared this trauma. But it doesn't go instantly to sex.
Now, I agree that makeup sex after an argument, you know, when all of these emotions and endorphins are running through you, is a fantastic thing. I will say that
Jason's laughing because he knows where this is going.
I will say that still in the middle of the argument sex is a myth.
Let us cue. Imagine in your head, there's that reel of Sean Connery and James Bond where they're fighting in the barn and he is smacking the tar out of this woman. And then they fade into sex. No, yeah, that's not
the whole. No, no, no. Oh, Calculon. And then a swoon. And then, you know,
that's date rape or that's.
There's that one. There's that one from Futurama where it's the professor and mom. You wretched she fossil! You stink pig! And then they just make out, and then it leads to horrible old people sex.
Can we get rid of like that? That idea that you. I do think that there's a thing that you fight with the people that you like because maybe you don't shut up. Don't understand those emotions just yet. But that instant translation into sex is disturbing.
Also, since we're on the topic of copulation and relationships and things, why does there have to be a love interest at all? And, yes. And an answer to that that I love, and it's one of my favorite moments because she's my waifu, in Horizon Zero Dawn. So many characters are like, we are down to bone. Let's go. And Aloy's like, I got things to do.
I love when that one guy tries to kiss her. The king tries to kiss her, and she just like face palm. Like, it's, nope, denied.
Like, spoilers for a little bit of her, a game that's like 3 years old at this point, or more, or older, actually. Because I was working at GameStop when I got this game. So it's like almost 5 years. The king lost his significant other, the woman he loved. Aloy is strong, independent, good in battle, reminds him of her. He immediately gloms onto her and is like, yo, I want to have sex with you. I want to marry you. Let's do this. And she's like, ah. First off, time out. No, I got things to do. And two, why would I want to replace her and be the fill-in for the one you can't get over? Dog, I'm out. I'll be back when I save the world. And
it's like, I gotta go kill some robot dinosaurs right now. Excuse me a minute. Hey, Nutty, do you know who voices Aloy?
No, who
was Ashley Birch.
Oh, I love Ashley Birch.
I literally had to stop playing the game just to be like, thank you, Horizon Zero Dawn.
So can I also add on a movie that just doesn't sandwich in a romantic subplot? Meanwhile, every other movie like this would. Aliens, again.
The only relationship she has in that movie is with that cat.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's there's no sandwiched in subplot, whereas they totally would elsewhere. Star Wars. Can we also add in, you're the only girl in the universe, so we must fall in love? I mean, that's just no.
I'll give you one that's even more egregious than that, and that's Enemy at the Gates.
Oh, Ashendale.
It didn't need that romantic subplot, and it certainly didn't need a trench warfare sex scene.
No.
Passchendaele. Yeah, Passchendaele. Same thing. Oh, sex with a nurse in the middle of an artillery barrage. Yeah, that happened in World War One. I'm sure it did.
We do not need a romantic plot in every movie, and we do not need sex scenes in battlefields.
Look, sex sells. I get it.
Yeah.
Sex is sexy, and sex sells. Sure. I also think it's kind of the cheapest way to sell mm-hmm. something. And if you need to shoehorn in a love story into your war movie because you think it's the only way people will go see it, you wrote and made a pretty crappy war movie.
Listen, yep. One of the best war movies I've seen in the last decade, 1917, has no sex scene in it.
Perfect.
And it's one of the most intense, just edge of your seat war movies I've ever seen.
Like, I will say, though, Paul Gross did redeem himself with Hyena Road, which is the story about Canadian troops in Afghanistan, because he has a love story in that movie.
And it's done right.
It's done right. It fits the plot. It's thematically relevant and was done with a lot of care and attention. And I thought that was well done. He redeemed himself for the crap that was passionate.
And for that one, he listened to the people he was writing about.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of things, like he is a little bit Mr. Hollywood when he visits a base and does not understand, but
he nearly died that day.
Yeah, but he listened, and he does make really good movies. I think that I care more about a relationship than about sex. And like what text it, like, a sexy movie is great. Everybody loves a sexy movie. But for instance, the latest Harley Quinn movie, the Birds of Prey movie, that's not about a romance. That was about relationships between women. And that was fantastic.
And a delicious looking sandal.
I mean, everybody in that movie was hot. Yes. But it told a better story, and you could still have all of your sexy stuff, and you could still have those really strong relationships. Give me movies about strong relationships over how are these two people going to hook up. Don't give me the Team Edward, Team Jacob nonsense. Like, they're both cardboard. Who cares?
Although Taylor Lautner is made out of chiseled cardboard.
He is chiseled cardboard, but he's still cardboard.
Also, you can have a sexy movie without it having to be blatantly sexy. You can also have very intimate relationships without sex. Look at you, Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her best friend.
Her best friend.
Right.
Well,
Disney says, they're best friends. And the daughter's like, uh-huh.
That's my other mom.
That's why I call them mom and mommy.
why does my other mom stay over all the time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So on that note, another one to bring up is, why is it that when you have a, why are all bisexual characters promiscuous?
Why are all bisexual characters women?
Right. Why is, or if it's a man, he's an utter whore. It's this whole idea of the slutty LGBT character needs to die and needs to die a quick death. I'll give you some examples of some positive LGBT characters that we need to see more of. One, Carter from Spin City.
All right.
He was black. He was gay. He had a job. That was it. His gayness came up, but it didn't. He wasn't a walking, here we go, get him girls stereotype.
And if you want to say like his stuff with his cat or his dog or whatever was like a gay trait, I just want to point to Exhibit A. That'd be Jason right below me there. How many cats?
Actually, I have. We actually did a chart today. Because
he says this while wearing a T-shirt that has cats eating ramen.
He has to consult the chart to know how many cats
and how many dogs. You know,
because we're doing medication and stuff like that, so it's much easier to make a chart so we know. Okay, we already gave it to
when
that.
You need a chart in order to know who's been vaccinated.
So how many cats, Jason?
I don't think we need a number at this point.
19.
And how many? And two dogs.
Yes, so 21 animals.
Yeah, 21 okay. animals, and he is doting and affectionate and all get out.
I like them more than I do most people.
So other positive examples.
Krem, the character from Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful trans male fighter. They bring it up, and Freddie Prinze Jr. plays a gay character in that and plays Krem's, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character is called the Iron Bull.
Oh,
and he is the company commander of the mercenary company that Krem is in. And it's like, wait, isn't that a woman? It's like, no, that's a man. Get over it. And he is just very supportive. Everyone is very supportive. And everyone is accepting of Krem for who he is. And there's actually huge amounts of dialogue that you can go in to get all of Krem's backstory. But they actually did a heck of a lot of research in making this character of figuring out how would you have a trans character in a universe that doesn't have HRT and doesn't have modern medicine. What would the voice of a trans man sound like after years of, you know, living a masculine lifestyle without, you know, the hormone replacement? And what would that do? And it was a super fun character. I wish there's comics that star him and everything was really, really well done. There needs to be more.
There needs to be more. Yeah.
We have an example of that in a show we just did a podcast about, Black Lightning.
His daughter.
And she's done even better because she is shown to be sexually active and does not have an issue with one night stands. And it's not that she's a whore and, oh my God. Like, no, it's just a thing that she does. Like, it's not even
when they talk about it, it's not anything about her sexuality. It's about she struggles to make a commitment. And that's a big character arc for her, is being able to trust somebody enough to commit to them. And when she does, it means so much more. And it has nothing to do with, are you gay or straight?
The scene where she has the one night stand with the with the one girl, and then
the reporter.
Yes. And gets back with her ex. And she's like, hey, you know, I got back with my ex. I just, you know, just wanted to let you know. And she's like, what? You thought that like after one night I was going to get obsessed with you? It's so good. It's such a
good. I also want to throw in, it's possibly the, and if other people have other examples for me, please let me know. Cause I would like to see better examples of male bisexuals in media, but Deadpool, pansexual, completely out there, and they made sure to include it in the movies. It is in the comics. It is everywhere.
Happy International Women's Day.
I mean, straight guys may enjoy that, those kinds of activities as well. But you know, his obsessive need for the Jackman.
Captain Jack Harkness.
Yes, Captain Jack Harkness is a perfect example. You're Captain right. Jack.
Absolutely.
I love Captain Jack. He is an amazing character.
That's because he's played by an amazing person.
But much like what Tech said, why does he have to want to sleep with everything?
Like, and the best thing about that character, right, is that because of the way, like, luckily it doesn't get into those that troubling area with his sexuality, because the character is played in a very flirty, very charismatic way, right? Like, so it's not that he's like hounding everyone for sex, like constantly 24/7.
Yeah, he understands the boundaries of consent. He flirts and he knows when to stop. And when he's in a committed relationship, when he's with Ianto, he is all about Ianto.
Yeah.
Your sexuality or your gender does not dictate the rest of your personality. So every gay and bi character on TV does not need to be promiscuous in the same way that I myself as a straight man does not need to be a bigot.
Yep. And I'll just give one last example, because they did many of the colors of the pride flag. Mm-hmm. Well, Orphan Black. Mm-hmm. You've got the lesbian Cosima, who says, "My sexuality is the least interesting thing about me." That is one of my favorite lines. Sarah is bisexual. And again, not a topic, just a thing about her character. There is a trans clone. It is fantastic. It is a fantastic.
So here's a thing. I'm totally going to steal this, this line from an autistic group.
Yeah.
That, nothing with us, without us.
Yes.
So if you are going to have gay characters or trans characters or LGBT characters in your stories, can you cast LGBT actors?
I am
to
so
play
done.
These roles, please. I am so tired of the straight guy playing the gay guy, or
I refuse to watch any more media. This is me going on the record. I refuse to watch any more media that has been made recently with cis actors playing trans characters. Like, that is my rule.
Even Jeffrey Tambor?
Especially Jeffrey Tambor. They had a reasoning for it, because it was supposed to be somebody at the beginning of their transition, but then we discovered that he was abusing people on set. So yes, especially Jeffrey Tambor.
That quote is actually really, really accurate. You know, nothing with us, without us, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at everything that does that puts interracial relationships on a pedestal or doesn't allow them to happen. You know, I'm looking at you, even though I love these two shows, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. Anyone with a comic book knows that Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are together. I get it. You gave her another person of color, but it still wasn't the large, aggressive looking black man. Like,
it wasn't your OTP. We understand. They are your OTP.
It's one of the terrible tropes is a lot of the times is that large black men in things can never be shown to have emotion or shown to be vulnerable. Like, Luke Cage has that on occasion. Like, he has it in very sparse moments. Heck, Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa character only really has it in the one scene when he's talking with his father and his ancestor. Other than that, he plays the stoic, proud king that basically looks like he's infallible and invulnerable, even though I love Black Panther.
Yeah.
Like, and also, like, it's okay for white people and black people to have relationships. It's fine. Like, it's also fine for, like, I don't know, an Asian person to be with a white person or a black person. Like, it's okay. Like, the world's not going to come to an end if someone with a lighter shade of skin is with someone with a darker shade of skin.
It's the world we actually live in. Come on.
I agree with you 1,000%. And I'll extend that a little bit further. It's that your race doesn't define your personality.
Yeah.
I am so tired of every Asian male in a movie being a nerd. Every Asian female is there as the sex pot. Every black woman is there because she's sassy. Every black man, if he's little, is there because he's the best friend. If he's big, he's there because he's the tank in the party and he's there to show how tough the bad guy monster is. If it's a Latina, she's there because she's spicy. If it's a Latin man and he's pretty, he's there to be Antonio Banderas and he's a love interest. If he's ugly, it's Danny Trejo and he's there to be an axe murderer. All fat white dudes are party animals. And I'm sick to gosh darn death of this.
Yes.
It just needs to end. So examples of where this has been done better, I mean, it's really easy. I could just knock out anything by Jordan Peele. I could say Black Panther, but I'm going to go and say in all of Star Wars is decidedly monochromatic. And then they did Rogue One. and I loved Rogue One because you had a wonderfully ethnically diverse cast that included men, women, Asians, and even a robot.
And a gay couple.
And
Connie Yen and his boyfriend are a thing.
Space
boyfriends.
Disney just didn't have the cojones to actually put it on screen.
I saw that movie in theaters, and since then, I am the Force, and the Force is with me.
Well,
I loved Donnie Yen's character in that so much. It was such a breath of fresh air for the Star Wars franchise, and is the best movie so far.
If I may, Star Trek started doing that from the get-go.
From the very
beginning. They kind of lost their plot. They kind of lost it their way and came back, but
everyone has value, whether you're black, white, alien, or yes, even a woman.
He's quoting Futurama.
I'm quoting Futurama here.
But I mean, like in the 60s, you've got a Japanese character. You know, this is post World War II. You've got a Japanese character. You've got a Russian character. You have a black woman on your, all of these characters are on the bridge of the Enterprise. And then, yes, it takes them a really long time to get to the LGBTQ stuff. But we've got Disco. We've got, and I know that there is controversy over making Sulu gay, but they did have a non-stereotypical Asian man being gay in which Star Trek was it when we see Sulu's husband?
So,
it was awesome. It was awesome.
Also, one of the things I wish they had done in the new Star Wars or Star Trek, if you're going to make Kirk a coozhound, just make him pansexual and make him go after everything that breathes.
Well, that goes into the trope that we want to go away. He can be a hound and still be straight. Like,
that the whole thing around Kirk being the manliest man of all men.
I know, but why does being promiscuous mean that you would be pansexual or bisexual? Like, that's the problem.
Yeah, I just want them to lean, if they're going to be ridiculous, lean into it. Like, you can have a sexy green lady in his bed, why not a sexy green man?
Well, at that, why does it always have to be a sexy green lady? Why can't it be like some sort of weird technical monster?
Yeah.
Technical monster. Why can't it just be a giant praying mantis mobster type guy who says everything is expensive?
Have you been reading
the Hydran?
Have you been reading the Villa Serotica lately?
So, I mean, I just, yeah.
And I will say this about them though. The fact that the new Star Trek had it be Uhura and Spock made me very happy.
Actually, that made me really happy too. It was an interesting take on that. I do want to move on to other tropes, but I think we can all say, like, stereotyping tropes, that's gotta go. That's gotta go for sure.
So I've got two more.
Go right ahead.
One, I am really, really sick and tired of watching a war movie where America wins in the end. Okay?
Yeah.
There have been a lot of wars and a lot of fantastic stories that can be told that do not have a happy ending for the red, white, and blue and do not need to be giant patriotic flag-waving America movies at the end of it. I'm looking at you, Pearl Harbor. My God, were you a disaster of a movie. There are a lot of movies being made around the world right now and that have been made in the past. And if you want to watch really, really good war movies with excellent stories that do not tell stories from just the American side, I recommend a couple. One called No Man's Land. It's a Belgian movie about the conflict in Bosnia. Two soldiers get lost on patrol from opposite sides of the war, and they find themselves in the middle of the trench line in no man's land. The only reason that they're not dead is because the other one is standing next to them. How do they get out without both dying? And it's an awesome, awesome, awesome movie that really explains the whole Bosnia conflict thing very, very well. I love it. Another one is called Nine Rota, R-O-T-A, or P-O-N-A, if you spell it in Cyrillic. It means the Ninth Company. It's the story of Russia's biggest action in Afghanistan in 1988, and looks exactly like the Afghanistan I went to in 2003. And the interactions that they have with the locals in that movie are exactly the type of interactions I had with the locals in 2003. Personal relationships, I mean, not the conflict, because I didn't shoot anybody. But another really, 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 really good movie that is not stereotypical flags waving. It just tells you that, guess what? War is hell and people have to live through it.
I am sick of, example, using an unwritten native language as a secret code so the Japanese cannot decipher your decipher your radio transmissions, and using Navajo code talkers as your radio operators is one of the most amazing stories of ingenuity in World War II, which we gave to John Woo and Nick Cage. And guess what they did with it? Because wind talkers sucked.
Listen, can we just... John Woo just needs to just do hard-boiled Asian action movies.
Like, he invented the double guns out, flying sideways shooting thing, and we love you for that, John Woo. Thank you for that.
And pigeons.
Huh?
And pigeons and or white doves, whatever they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, we love him for that. But again, pick a person that is good for the job you need done. Like, if you want to make a horror movie that has meaning and purpose behind it, but also as scary as all get out, there's Jordan Peele for that. You don't want to go get, I don't know, John Carpenter to go make a drama. Like you don't want that. You have to pick the right thing for the right job, the right tool for the right job. And
I need this movie to be visually beautiful, incredibly thought provoking, and very emotional. What's Ang Lee doing right now? Not, hey, I got to do another John Wick sequel. What's Ang Lee doing right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he can't make another horror movie. It's fine.
Speaking of John Wick sequels, the previews for Nobody?
Yeah, those look good.
Go, that looks good. What if Liam Neeson was John Wick?
Yeah, yeah.
But sadly, that is going only to theaters, which is, I think, is so silly.
there are some that I want to talk about a bit. So how about pregnancy as a plot device or as punishment?
Mm.
Oh my God.
Can we get rid of that? Like, the amount of people that accidentally get pregnant in movies and TV and books, as opposed to in reality, like, and especially it's like, oh, I'm a very successful, very smart going person. I'm so busy that somehow I accidentally got pregnant. No, come on. You're not, you know, a teenager that doesn't have the resources, that doesn't know better, that doesn't have the education. It's frustrating because it's we want our characters to do this and we can't do it without making her pregnant.
I think it goes to an even bigger issue, which is using femininity as a weakness for female characters.
Yeah.
Just because a woman can get pregnant doesn't mean that her life ends and all of things around her that she's built shatter and crumble into dust because she's going to have a baby.
I mean, and a character like, oh, we're on a break. I dated this other girl. Now we're back together and everything's good. And, oh, my ex, the girl I dated while we were on a break or whatever, is pregnant. Uh-oh, I guess I should never have strayed or whatever it is. Whatever the stupid thing is, pregnancy is a punishment. It is pushing our characters together. Can we just write better stories, please?
Yeah, or here's another one. Just because a woman has her period doesn't mean she's crazy. It doesn't mean...
No.
It doesn't mean she can't control herself or her emotions. It doesn't mean she can't function in her daily life, because women do it every day.
And just because you're pregnant doesn't mean that you lose function, cognitive function. I mean, yes, there are hormonal things going on. Your body is changing. But like this idea of, oh, she's instantly pregnant. No, don't lift that. It's too heavy. I've been pregnant all of 3 seconds. Go away.
Yeah. The fact that natural functions that females have are used as examples of either weakness or something they cannot function in life through or around, like, it's just a giant thing. Like, it just, and also.
Look, I'm gonna give some real talk here. It's not that we are crazy. It's just we're dealing with all this other stuff that our tolerance to put up with your BS is already extended dealing with what's going on. We have not changed. It's just we're dealing with more. And when you have more on your plate, you deal with the BS coming externally less. Nothing about us has changed except we are not making you more comfortable. Like, we are always doing.
Yeah, their patience is still up here. It's just that the cup is full.
And okay, No puns. hormonally, women have more testosterone during those times, and they're actually more chemically more in that side of things. And they're like, oh, it's all the estrogen. No, it's the lack of estrogen. It's just, but it's, anyway,
it's like, it's just
pregnancy ruins stories because people can't write them properly, or they're using them as a plot device to force their characters to do something or to punish. They're not doing it because I wanted to write a story about a family.
And let's be honest, don't be an action star female and get pregnant, because you're probably going to lose that kid in that movie and it's going to be some weird motivation at some point.
And we'll just tack on to there that apparently not being able to have kids means
you're a monster.
You're a monster. Yes. Thank you, Joss Whedon in Age of Ultron. Screw you.
Oh, and in the same vein, the same trope of the man has to be the provider.
Oh.
And that a man losing his job while his wife keeps hers is somehow the worst thing that's ever happened. And he is now a horrible person who cannot provide for his family because he lost his just calm down, people.
I want a movie where a guy gets laid off and by the end of the movie still doesn't have a job, but has like learned to cook and like do all these things that he couldn't do before. Like
okay, so not exactly that, but have you seen the movie Chef?
No, I've not seen Chef.
Okay, so he loses his job.
The John Favreau one?
Yeah, the John Favreau one. He loses his job. His ex-wife is much more wealthy than he is. And she is encouraging him. And she's like, you don't need to be working in a restaurant like that. Just get a food truck. You should just do this. You should just do that. And she's encouraging him to, like, you don't need to be the provider. You should be following your dreams. Make yourself happy. And that is an example of it being done right.
Yeah. Like,
actually a really good movie. He was already a chef, but, Mr. Mom is an old movie that actually plays with this and does a really good job.
And it's kind of funny. It's funny.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I saw it a lot because it was one of those free McDonald's movies. And I had siblings that worked at McDonald's. So we had all the McDonald's movies. And
I forgot about those.
So Michael Keaton gets laid off from his job. And he's struggling to get a new job. And his wife is like, well, I'll put my resume out. And she gets hired in this marketing job. And he has to become the stay-at-home dad. And at first, it's a struggle for him because he's not been doing it. And then he gets an appreciation for what his wife has gone through. But when he gets a chance to go back to work and everything, he's like, I don't actually want to be here. I want to be home with my kids. I've missed so much because I haven't been able to spend time with my kids. I'm not coming back to work full time unless I can do that. And that I thought was a really powerful message. And it's a movie everybody forgot and everybody likes to make jokes about.
Like, let's be fair. Michael Keaton is amazing. So
I love Michael Keaton. So
another trope right in line with that is there is nothing wrong with step parents.
Yes. The evil step parent needs to die.
And I want to go right to a movie that does this horribly wrong. Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
Pierce Brosnan is amazing in that movie.
Yeah. He actually really loves the kids too.
Robin Williams is a holy terror in that movie.
The mother is draconic. She is just
the best
parent in that movie is Pierce Brosnan.
I hate to say it, an example that is actually probably done sort of well is I think it's called Stepmom, and Susan Sarandon is the birth mom, and Julia Roberts is the stepmom. She's the younger model sort of a thing. And the birth mom gets cancer, and then they end up having a strong bond and everything. And it's a really beautiful movie, but it goes to show that the stepmom is not evil. She's just doing her best, you know?
I blame Disney for this.
It's a whole Disney trope, right?
Another one that needs to be brought up in the same vein is, well, step-parents and foster parents.
Yeah.
Is the foster parents in Shazam.
They are amazing!
Yes.
I love them!
You know, they're trying to create a strong family unit with their foster kids. They're trying to be supportive, but they are also incredibly respectful of each of their kids' identity. And that, you know, some of them want to do things or not other things, or they want to be involved, or they want to pray or not pray. And they're never really pushy.
The only thing they're really pushy on is being a family. Other than that, you know, they're hyper respectful, and you need to see more of that.
Yeah.
And less of the evil stepdad, the evil foster mom.
Yeah, I agree. And let's have like actual families with adoption that they're shown as families. Like none of this. Oh, we're adopted, so we can totally bone. No, yeah. That is gross. Get rid of it.
Yeah, we're talking about you, Umbrella Academy.
I'm talking about you, Dexter. Screw that.
No,
he was
a baby
when he was adopted. There is no, that's gross.
Yeah, like, you know, again, an Umbrella Academy, they were raised as brother and sister. And people are like, well, actually, they were raised in a facility to be superheroes.
I don't care.
They're still brothers.
It's gross.
Is this where we talk about Woody Allen?
Exactly. But, you know, I'll go back to Shazam as doing it right. Because in Shazam, I mean, yes, they're a foster family, but some of those kids are adopted. And you know, the big crux is the oldest child. She's really upset because she got into the school of her dreams, but she doesn't want to leave her family. Like, I love that. Let's go to lightning round. Unless is there
I got one
go
more.
Ahead.
Not every problem in a movie needs to be galactic in scope. Why is it? It's not just a pimp going around killing people. No, he's a ghost pimp with a hook for a hand and bees in his mouth, and he appears out of walls and.
Okay, wait, but Candyman is awesome, so don't you dare.
And let's be fair, who wouldn't want Tony Todd giving sweets to the
suit? I mean, you are gonna get bee kissed and hooked.
I could do it without the bees.
By Kern, son of Moog. Guess what? I'm in. But not every movie has to be.
Again,
you know, it's like the Marvel movies were really bad for it because it was every bad guy had to be bigger than the bad guy before it.
Yeah.
And where do you end? Well, I guess we're going to have to kill half the people in the galaxy because it's the only thing we got left because we're running out of bad guys because they have to make them bigger and bigger. And they can't put the Defenders characters in the Marvel movies because, well, those are street level heroes. And they only deal with street level problems. They can't deal with the big bad. Yeah, you don't need to be the biggest big bad to make a good movie. Example, Knives Out. Knives Out is a murder mystery about a bunch of people just arguing over their inheritance. And you get to see Captain America as a rich, entitled Hampton douchebag.
He's in a really great sweater too big for him.
He's basically Stephen King. Like,
but it's all of these kids fighting over dad's inheritance in a Nantucket murder mystery.
Yeah.
And it is hilarious and fun and a really good movie.
Really good movie.
And didn't need galactic overlords and world spanning problems. It is just it's the story of a family. And you can have a story about a family be really good without needing galactic super monsters.
Or Nutty just finished season one of this. Cloak and Dagger. The villain of that first season is just a cop. A dirty cop who ended up accidentally shooting a kid. And them dealing with it. Well, it wasn't an accident. But dealing with the fallout of that and a lot of the conflict comes from where the family is still dealing with that grief. Like, there is no galactic evil villain from space in that show, and there's not one in season two, although there is a god, but anyway.
But you know, things like Luke Cage, Black Mariah, the crooked local politician, was a good enough villain. We didn't need Diamondback.
She wasn't like the type of local politician reaching for the presidency. No, she was happy in her corner of the world.
She was the queen of Harlem, and that's all she wanted.
We didn't need anything else. Now, I will say for the Supernatural, they did really good with Bushmaster because he's fantastic.
And that's
but
just
it's still a local thing, even though he's in Haiti.
That's just a story of revenge against Black Mariah. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
So, since we're going to go to the lightning round, my lightning round is this, because I brought up Cloak and Dagger.
Before you do that. Just tacking on to galactic things. I'm so over light beams into space as the way that our movie ends and things are resolved. It happened in Cloak and Dagger. It happened in WandaVision. It happened in every Avengers movie. Guardians light beams into space. Guardians of the Galaxy. Or, you know, two CGI dolls fighting with fireworks. I mean, that come on. You could do it better. So go ahead, Jason.
So, my lightning round is men and women
don't have to bone or be in a relationship. They can just be friends. In Cloak and Dagger, there are a love interest, but they are not with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what makes it even better is that I love how the love interests for both of the characters are confused at how intimate the relationship is between these two.
Like, you can be motivated to want to help somebody and motivated to look out for their best interests and it not be because you want to be with them romantically.
And Cloak
and that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with either of you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not just, well, oh,
yeah, she's great. She's smart. She's funny. She's amazing. But gosh darn it, she's in a wheelchair.
And again, Cloak and Dagger touch on this as well, with the fact that these two characters are literally becoming best intimate friends.
Yeah.
And they help each other deal with problems and emotional issues and mental health. And there's no sex. There's no relationship other than them being friends. And besides that, the girl giving the Louisiana tours, my God.
Oh, Vita is just so cute.
So we're still in the lightning round?
We're still in the lightning round.
Okay, the whole plot revolving around kids being right and adults not believing them. I'm looking at you, Field of Dreams, Harry Potter, and all the rest, because this normally leads to many different forms of child abuse, and I really, 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 really don't like this trope.
Can I go back to Shazam being an example of it being done right?
Yes.
Because the parents listen to the kids.
Yes.
Although, sadly, we're not, because the version of Superman in the DC universe right now is not the Superman we want. We'll never get the conversation between Superman and the.
You know what? That might change. That might change by the time we need to get to that conversation. I'm going to throw out there. Mental illness is cute. Let's get rid of that. The manic pixie dream girl, the mental illness is cute, or mental illness fuels my creativity, so I need to not get help.
Or mental health issues are superpowers. I am tired of person with autism being superpowered. I'm looking at you, Jurassic World.
I'm looking at you, whatever Kiefer Sutherland TV show there was. I didn't watch it. It was awful. No. No, just no.
I'm really okay. The whole plot revolving around kids being the smartest characters in the movie, surrounded by bumbling idiot adults, normally jerky foster parents or step parents. I really hate that. I also really hate it when the dog or cat is the smartest character in the whole movie.
But you love Mindy and Buttons,
silly puppy. That you can take a gunshot to the shoulder and still completely function, make it through the third act and fight the big bad and you'll be fine. Just do with a field dressing and a Band-Aid at the end of it. I'm looking at you, every 80s action movie ever. I am so tired of the shot to the shoulder as the, we need to show that he's human, and we have to show that, he's in danger, but we don't want him to be too seriously hurt. So we'll shoot him in the shoulder.
Characters falling in love and having relationships with their doctors, their therapists, or their priests.
Oh, yeah.
Go away, die in a fire. And I'm looking at you, Fleabag. That is a complete violation. That was wrong. I know that it's supposed to be about Phoebe's character and everything is focused on her, but that priest, that was disgusting. That is wrong. That is a violation. And there is a scene where they're trying to show like that the priest is also struggling, but there is a scene where she is coming to him for spiritual guidance and help, and he starts making out with her. And that is disgusting.
What movie is this?
It's the TV show Fleabag.
Oh, okay. I've never seen it.
It's really good. A tech can't watch it.
The one punch knockout that leaves a person knocked out for the rest of the scene.
And no brain dabblage.
Because being unconscious is bad for you, and it takes a really, really special type of hit to knock a person out and leave them out. And it very, very rarely happens. Watch any amount of boxing or fight sports, and watch the number of fights that end with a guy getting knocked to the ground, he gets scrambled for a couple of seconds, and then he gets back up, and he goes, "Wow, that was a good fight. Thanks, man."
Yeah, it's called being hit on the button for a reason. Yeah.
How many times do you get knocked out? I mean, one of these days, you're just going to wake up unconscious.
also,
I just wanted to throw out there, can we just have, actual depictions of either concussions or not knocking people out. This is why people don't remember. I said that people don't think that that they learn from movies. Well, this is why people are not taking concussion syndrome seriously, and they're not realizing all that we have to do to protect our heads because they watch these movies and people get knocked out all the time, and then they're in the next scene.
I blame you, Rocky Five.
Okay, but there's brain dabbling.
Revolvers hold six bullets. Can movie editors learn to count to six, please? Or
how about?
Okay, a pump action shotgun. Okay, it's not a super soaker. It doesn't do more damage the more times you pump it.
You just expend your ammo.
I am so sick and tired of guys walking through rooms just racking shells. They haven't fired anything. It's just an accent every point.
I have my gun trained on somebody, and I make my really scary, threatening statement. Then I pull the safety lever back as a method of an intimidation. No, what happens if they tried to charge you between you showing up and delivering your speech? You're basically, you pointing the gun at them with that on does nothing.
And the funny thing is, if you watch their hands don't move. They add the foley of the safety clicking off every time I can go get guns right now. I can flail them around. They don't click every time you bring them up to your shoulder.
I got another one that just makes me as angry, and it is the slut or prude dichotomy, that there is no nuance. You are either a slut or you are a prude.
Just like high school all over again. No.
And can we get rid of the born sexy, or if I'm aged fast, I was 3 years old in the last scene, but now I'm 21. You can now sleep with me.
Oh, Fifth Element, I'm looking at you.
Oh, Twilight, that's disgusting.
So also, here's another one that I bring up all the time, is because it's normally depicted, you know, reasonable, logical, understanding, empathic, and caring spouses not listening to their significant other. I'm literally looking at you, T'Challa. Your girlfriend gave you the answer.
Yeah.
She gave you the answer at the beginning. You are a great king until it comes to listening to that woman.
And we wanted to make sure that we showed you positive examples of when you listen to your spouse or you go against this trope, that there are ways to do it and do it well. And all of our examples came from really good movies, because better writing makes a better story. So when you lean on these tropes, you're actually making a worse story. So that's why we're complaining about this.
I mean, I tried to narrow it down. I really did. I had a whole bunch from this movie. I'm just going to say, can we just never do Armageddon again?
Yeah.
There's just so many. That's my father up there. Shut up. There's 7 billion of us down here and we're all going to die. But you're mad because that's my father. Shut up. I know you're Liv Tyler and you're hot, but go away. Who let her into the control room in the first place?
Yeah, we're trying to do a job here. Can we just do our jobs? Because, you know, we actually we sent those guys up into space because we thought they had the experience. We have the experience here. Let us use that experience.
Also,
are an accountant.
Also, don't soundtrack a sex scene with the person in the sex scene's father's music.
Yeah, that's a little gross. And on that note, these are the tropes we're tired of seeing. What are the tropes you're tired of seeing? And make sure you let us know what examples you would like to show as how to do it well. And you can do that by typing it in the Discord. If you're not in the Discord, go to nimlas.org and click on the Discord link. If you're in Twitch chat, you just type in !Discord. I don't have it easy to find, so you have to kind of go to these two different places to get your link. If you're a patron, you can go. I've sent you a message, or I put a post on there with a special link that brings you right to your patron only Discord channel. So you can come and give us those answers. If you're still relying on the awful Facebook, we still have the Facebook group. So you can always respond to us there, Twitter, Instagram, wherever. You'll get all the deets on the way out or by going to nimlas.org. But Jason, where can people find you and your stuff on the internet, including stuff that has us, but is not on this podcast because it's even spicier than what I allow?
Because I'm a foul-mouthed individual. You can find everything I do over at nerdswithvoices.com, but you can also find me on the Twitch thing at twitch.tv/jtrooper501, where you can come and ask me why that's the thing, and it's not about stormtroopers, I promise.
Not about stormtroopers. Now, Jason, what are the most recent things that we've put on Nerds with Voices that we did not put on Nutty Bites?
So, coming out next week will be,
Don't give dates because this isn't going up tomorrow.
No. Or I should say it's coming out soon, but it's going to take a second because it's a 2 hour, actually over 2 hours, our Coming to America 2 podcast.
And it's really Coming to America and Coming to America 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also just recently talked about WandaVision.
WandaVision. So both
will be coming out here soon. And we do those on my feed because I like to curse. And Nutty doesn't follow the proper rules of PG-13.
Nutty follows Nutty's rules.
Although Nutty I feel like tech is like waiting to try to like change that rule. Like he just slides in like quiet F-bombs.
Anyway, thanks for joining us. We'll let us know what you think and we'll be talking to y'all another time. Bye. And before we go, I just wanted to thank all of our patrons. Without you, we wouldn't have 2 episodes a month. Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you. I want to give a special thank you to our top tier biggest daddy, Jax. Thank you so much for your support. And thank you to our other big daddies, Jason and Rich the TT, you two rock. And for our next tier, our patrons of the arts, thank you to Andy, Luke, to Mark Cabot, Mark the Encaffeinated One, Melissa Bartel, Susanna, and thank you to all the other patrons who are fantastic. And those $1 patrons are how my Patreon actually survives. It's how we even got started. And I love all of you. So thank you to our number one fan, Shane. Thank you to Cliff, Uncle Monster. Thank you to Greg Larson, Harold, the Hatching Phoenix himself, Hugh, who likes comics and all things, fun and geeky. I don't know why I'm going special here. Thank you to Ian, to Justine. You need to check her out on Twitch. To Ken Kennedy, Kinsey, Lynette. Thank you so much. Thank you to Mike. Thank you to Patrick Scafito. Thank you to the Radical Geek, Steve Pritchard. Thank you so much. Susan this time. Thank you. You rock and are my rock. And thank you to Will and Zach Mann. You all are awesome.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.
In the distant future, humanity entertains itself with countless hours of podcasts. But the podosphere is troubled. Corporate networks and true crime shows rule the iTunes rankings with an iron fist. The year is 2019. Our only hope, the Nostalgia Pilots.
Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a podcast that for 100 years has fought the evils of outer space. I'm your host, Hugh.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Jason.
And I'm Spence.
4 podcasters fight back by watching and discussing classic giant robot anime.
Hey, do we have any of those cancers left? The underwater ones?
Yeah. Thanks, that's what we need in this episode is more.
Drop a couple Saturn rockets to it. It'll be...
Their first mission, Toonami mainstay, mobile suit, Gundam Wing.
Oh my god, you're describing the Spice Girls.
See? You get it!
Suit up at nostalgiapilots.com.
Dezooms. So I have 2 recordings, and if all else fails, we have Twitch's recording.
Can you download those?
Yeah, you can download them and you can export them to YouTube.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good backup. Nutty likes redundancy. Redundancy is a podcaster's best friend. A podcaster's best friend is redundancy. All right. Are we ready? Are we ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Go for lunch. Ready anytime, Nutty.
I hate you so much.
Let's do it.
Just before you start, you can start anytime. We're ready.
All right. Well, start line. Let's go.
Completely necessary censorship towards tech.
He started it.
Unnecessary censorship.
And I'm going to stop the recording.
Honestly, my next step was with the cursing is I'm going to start going all Johnny Dangerously with the farging ice holes.
I mean, I'm all for that. I mean, the whole reason I did the way that we bleep the swears is because I wanted it to sound like bad dubbing on cable. So farging ice holes works for me.
Funky butt loving. Potato. Profanity. Expletive deleted. Nimlas forever.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.